We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
RotoViz Dynasty Reanimators. It is time for another edition, another episode of one of our favorite shows from last offseason, where we did take over a orphan team over at the FFPC. They have lots of teams now available. If you want to head over to their website, it is myffpc.com. You can check out the teams that are available. We took over a team last year, Sean, and we obviously talked a couple of weeks ago about the cutdowns, which were coming up. We did have some challenges around the roster size to get down to the 16. We had four players over the total amount. So we had to make some moves, and I will give Sean the utmost credit for making these happen with the trades right at the deadline to get the team cut down. We did have to make two cuts. We'll talk about them first, then we'll get into some of these trades, which I think listeners will find very, very interesting from the player perspective. But Sean, we cut Antonio Gibson, now with the New England Patriots. We also cut Rondell Moore, now with the Atlanta Falcons. Both players, if you could, you'd probably rather hold on to on your roster. But in this situation, they were the lowest, you know, kind of players on our totem pole, Sean, and they had to be moved out. So we are now sitting in a situation where we made it down to 20. But for people who are listening carefully, they will know I said we had 20 roster spots. And obviously that means we had to move four players one way or the other. So as things sit, Sean, before we get into the total team or the total draft capital that is now on the roster, we'll talk about those trades. But the first trade that we'll talk about is just player for pick, pretty much straight up. And we'll get Sean's thoughts based on his ranking of this player and his rankings, and then what our value was in getting the player back. So we had a situation based on our previous picks from last year where we did trade for Kenneth Walker during the NFL draft itself, and that left us without a second round pick this year. So we were going to have our first round pick, our third round pick, and then obviously to the fourth round. So we did receive the 202, and that was received, Sean, for George Pickens, who we moved on in this situation. I feel very comfortable about the move. You know, this deal was done, I believe, 2 weeks ago at this point. So, but I feel very comfortable with the pick we received, with moving on the player as well. How are you feeling in hindsight with the Pickens pick or the Pickens trade? And then where do you have him currently sitting in your dynasty rankings?
So, Colin, we had to move some guys in order to keep all of the players we wanted. It was interesting because we were working on some other potential trades with JJ and his partner, and none of those came to fruition, but his partner did reach out, and just they were very disappointed that we hadn't offered them Pickens for the 201, which, you know, in some of these situations you're trying to figure out like where the best fits are, as opposed to simply spamming everyone. Now it is possible that we'll also feel bad about this in retrospect if we get to the 201 and the guy that we really want is there and he's picked, and then we're sitting at 202 and don't have the player. Well, I think that in a vacuum, you probably wouldn't do this, but I do think there's a lot of risk here where George Pickens he didn't do what we wanted him to do in 2023. And then he comes in at the end and has a couple of huge games. Now, the fact that he did finally emerge late is a promising sign for his 2024. And yet there's also, I think, the potential to move these guys when the blow-up scores, the big games, are the ones that we remember because they're the last things that happened. If these games had happened in the first month of the season, I don't think you'd get these prices on George Pickens because people would be looking at the full year and be like, yeah, I mean, his target per route numbers did jump. He was better able to command some volume, and yet it's still well below what you really want for an alpha receiver. He's still out there doing the frustrating types of things that give you a lot of pause, including not blocking for his teammates, right? I felt like there was a very wide range of outcomes for Pickens going into the year, anything from what we saw but without those blow-up games to a big year where those blow-up games, you know, were not so few and far between. We got a mix. And so I think that for me, we're now at a point where, do I want to have that type of player with the Pittsburgh Steelers? Do I want to have that type of player when Arthur Smith is going to be calling plays and Russell Wilson might be pulling the trigger? The answer is absolutely not. And so even though we encouraged people to draft him a year ago, I think this is where you have to understand where in part you were wrong. And just because you were bailed out by some good games at the end that make being wrong not look quite so egregious, you don't just double down on that and be like, well, maybe we're going to start to get more of those games. Now, maybe we will, right? I mean, George Pickens is still a young player. You can emerge in year three. I think there's a very strong likelihood that Justin Fields is the quarterback, and then you have this chance for him to unlock George Pickens just like he did for DJ Moore last year. But we have a lot of reason to believe that, A, you know, DJ Moore is just a lot better. And then you're going to have the Pittsburgh Steelers, too, as a team who adds somebody as we go through the rest of the offseason. And so
they kind of have to.
Yeah, I mean, they have to, right? And so when you're looking at the prices on Pickens, you're thinking, I mean, they're influenced by the fact that he had a hot finish, and they're influenced by the fact that people don't yet know who that other guy is going to be. As soon as the other player is dropped down into that spot, then, I mean, he was being drafted aggressively earlier in the offseason because people have also kind of given up on Deontay Johnson. And Deontay Johnson in the context of an Arthur Smith offense is not interesting at all. But, you know, Johnson, now that he's with the Panthers, I think is undervalued. But then you also have the element here where Deontay Johnson maybe was not going to cut in because people have just gotten very familiar with him and sour to an extent. But basically, it's just not exciting. Once the Pittsburgh Steelers put somebody in there with a little bit more cachet, then Pickens is going to fall as well. Now, is the guy that we're able to select at the 202 going to be immediately above Pickens? I mean, that's where it gets tricky, and that's where the necessity of cutting players, and so it's not just the straight-up value, but it's the player that you lose because you're going to have to cut somebody you'd want to keep, does factor into how we do these trades. So when I'm looking at that spot in my particular rankings here, well, this is for RB Triflex, Superflex format. Xavier Worthy, the wide receiver 26th at the 508. Troy Franklin, the wide receiver 29 at the 602. Brian Thomas, wide receiver 30 at 604. And then Adonai Mitchell as the wide receiver 32 at the 609 before we get to Pickens at wide receiver 33. So the likelihood, I think, is that certainly Brian Thomas is going to be long gone by the time that it gets to 202, unless we get a very unanticipated draft slot for him. Unless he's a big faller, Brian Thomas is going to be long gone. Xavier Worthy probably gone. Mitchell is more controversial, but probably gone. The guy that you would think maybe will be there at the 202 and maybe would have had a better chance of being there for us at the 201 is a Troy Franklin. But I guess even if that portion of it doesn't work out, I'm still very comfortable with having moved this pick for the 202. Even though Pickens is very young, you can reset with a little bit younger player. And, you know, I'm rooting for Pickens, still have him on some teams. There were leagues where I wasn't able to sell him. And yet I think that this trade balances objectives nicely in that it's fair for us. It's fair for the team who was acquiring him, and it gives us some flexibility.
Yeah. Like would I like to have got the, you know, 110 for him rather than the, you know,
and that's what we were going after to start with, was the 110.
Yeah. But you have him in tier four in your rankings, which is, you know, based on what you would look to get as a first round pick. But when you're looking at the 202, like you're, I know it's not a first round pick, but you're right on the fringe in terms of what you're actually getting. And because then you're looking at the cut down scenario that you mentioned, I think it's a very fair trade all around. And it's going to be fun to see how it plays out and how our draft plays out and how the NFL draft plays out and who we take in at the 202. But I think overall, Sean, pretty fair trade. And as you mentioned, achieved the objectives. The other one that I'm really interested to get, I think this will be one that will intrigue people, because
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, if they listen to our draft show earlier this week, they'll know that we're not expecting Russell Wilson to do huge things for Pittsburgh. Maybe we're wrong, but Justin Fields, I think, has a good shot at being the starting quarterback there before the season is over. This is a team where we also had DeAndre Hopkins, who's obviously an aging veteran at this point. And then we have Matthew Stafford. For as much as we like Matthew Stafford, also is, you know, on the far end of his career at this particular moment in time. So the two of those guys paired up to acquire Justin Fields. And, you know, you'll see all sorts of takes on Justin Fields, from like, why would you trade for a backup quarterback, you know, to Justin Fields is clearly going to be the starter for the Pittsburgh. There's a huge range of outcomes. So I'm very intrigued to see what people think of this particular trade, to give up Stafford, to give up Hopkins, who could also be a player you would be using throughout the season, to gain Fields, who may not play at all in 2023. This is one that, you know, during our draft earlier this week, we talked about, you know, players that make you excited. This is a trade that made me excited when I seen that it was accepted.
And again, I think this is a fair trade in that DeAndre Hopkins and Matthew Stafford should be usable pieces for the team that we moved them to. And yet for our particular team, I don't think that those guys were going to move the needle a ton. No. And there's the potential for them to lose a lot of value in a hurry, whereas on the Justin Fields side, there's the potential for him to gain a lot of value in a hurry.
Those two guys could go to zero for two different reasons. Hopkins could be performance-wise, but, you know, I think we're at the point where there's going to be one of these seasons where Stafford just says, you know, it's over. No, a bit like we've seen with Aaron Donald this year, you know, retiring. I think we're not far away from Stafford retiring. And then the way I'm looking at this trade is, in 2 years, you will have Justin Fields on your roster versus two players who are probably retired at that point and worth zero.
And so then the question is, what's Fields worth at that juncture? And if he doesn't play all season, then he's going to lose a lot more value. And you're starting to think of him, you know, more along the lines of a Trey Lance. And in this particular format, where you are only able to keep the 16 guys until you draft back up again, you know, Trey Lance is not someone who's even rosterable, much less somebody that you're really emphasizing. But the fact of the matter is that, I mean, Fields still has a better floor from the perspective of being a much better college player. And one of the things that, again, jumped out for me on Fields as I was doing some research on both Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix for content that will be out shortly is just how good Fields actually was from an accuracy perspective in college, and then how he had some stealth metrics from a scrambling perspective that did foreshadow what he's done as a rusher at the NFL level. And so the question with Fields is going to probably always be this balance or trade-off between what he does for you as a fantasy player versus the strengths and weaknesses he has as a reality player, where the inability to probably process and run a true NFL offense from the perspective of what most offensive coordinators want to do, he probably can't quite do. And then in addition to that, you have all of the sacks, which are devastating from a drive success rate perspective. They're devastating from a game management perspective as you're trying to work your way through the limited number of possessions that you have in an NFL game. So when we come out here and we promote Justin Fields all the time, it's not coming at it from the perspective of being oblivious to or simply, you know, purely ignoring some of the problems. And yet the strengths that Fields has are also so high end. I mean, extraordinary may be a little bit of an exaggeration, but you think about the arm strength, you think about the accuracy, and you think about the mobility and how that both helps and hurts. But the chance to, you know, rush for 1,000 yards, we've said it several times, it may not turn out to be the case, but basically what teams are looking for from Anthony Richardson is that the performance that Fields has had that has gotten him essentially benched in a position where no NFL team wants him as a starter is what you're hoping for as like the upside scenario from an Anthony Richardson. Well, when you think about it from a fantasy perspective, we go back in and you think about the guys who have gotten additional chances, right? You have Geno Smith reemerging. You have Gardner Minshew looking like he's going to get a shot at starting at least for a while this season. You had Jordan Love dealing with a long stretch there where he didn't play particularly well, even in practice, and yet the Packers waited out and he emerges at that point. You have someone like a Daniel Jones who has a decent little stretch and gets a massive contract. You have Baker Mayfield coming back. You have someone like a Derek Carr who is constantly making tons of money despite performance that a lot of people, you know, wouldn't understand. I mean, some of those guys I like. It's not something where I'm trying to bash all of these players, but the need for a starting caliber quarterback at the NFL level is always so extreme that I just don't see any world in which Justin Fields doesn't play the next 10 years mostly as a starter. Again, there's risk because what's happened this offseason has been bad for him, right? But the thing that is so good right off the bat is that he's competing with a guy who is completely and totally done. And so that helps you because it gives you an opportunity this year. But then as we look forward as well, it's just hard for me to believe that Justin Fields won't find some admirers, won't find some situations where he is a huge upgrade on the other options that a team has. You put him on a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers, just as an example, right? You could make the case, and most people are going to say, well, you know, you can make that case, but we're going to rule on the other side. But you could make the case that the biggest difference between Lamar Jackson and Justin Fields is simply the caliber of the rest of the team that he's played for. Now, Fields is probably going to get a little bit of a chance to demonstrate that that's true, playing for a team with the Pittsburgh Steelers, where Mike Tomlin and company always win or come out around 500, right? It's a much stronger overall organization than what he got to play for with the Chicago Bears. So he's going to get that chance to show some things. Certainly if they do actually add another receiver through the draft or some type of trade, and he's got some weapons to deal with. Because if you have someone in addition to a Pickens, and then you have Pat Freiermuth as an interesting tight end who is buried a little bit by just how dysfunctional the offense was last season, you could start to look at Fields as being a player who does have the weapons in that system to be successful. it'll be interesting to see where it goes. But even if he doesn't start the year in 2024 as the guy, he'll probably get some starts. And when you're looking at the next stage, and the fact of the matter is, Colin, any time that he actually plays, then his fantasy value is in the first round of current startups. I mean, his fantasy value is that high to where you have to go after him because he's going to outscore players like a Joe Burrow, like a Justin Herbert, like a Brock Purdy, like a Jared Goff, like a Tua. I mean, those guys, you know, like a Trevor Lawrence, those guys are under so much pressure to have monster seasons just to be able to score at the same level of a player like a Justin Fields.
Yes, we'll see how it plays out. As I mentioned, excited for that trade. It does leave us now, Sean, with 16 people on the roster, and it leads us to a situation where some people will say we have four starting quarterbacks. Some people will say we have one. We probably have one. We have Tua on the roster. We have Jacoby Brissett now with the New England Patriots, who did show flashes with Washington at the end of the season. Then we have Justin Fields, and we have a player who didn't show flashes at the end of the season but did show them at the start of the season in Sam Howell, now with the Seattle Seahawks. We have Kenneth Walker, Chase Brown, Roshan Johnson, Raheem Mostert, DeAndre Swift at running back, Jerry Jeudy, Justin Jefferson, Quentin Johnson, and Jameson Williams at wide receiver. Wide receiver maybe becoming the place with, I would say, there's a lot of upside there, but there's a lot of potential question marks, and you know, we haven't seen it consistently from a number of those guys outside of Jefferson. Then we have Sam Laporta, Pat Freiermuth, and Evan Engram at tight end. That pick up off the 202 leaves us with the 107, the 202, the 37, the 42, the 47, the 48, the 58, and the 77. So we'll have a lot of thoughts ahead of our rookie draft, obviously post-NFL draft, and then we'll share with what we did in those picks to see what the roster looks like after that draft. But Sean, to close things out today, we are going to do a question from one of our listeners. Comes in from JD on perpetual reloading. He says he has perpetual thoughts about perpetual reloading, so it's on his mind all the time. He said, "Hi guys, I'm back with another question about Dynasty. It's a 12 team league, start 9 players. It's tight end premium, 1.5 points per tight end. You can flex the other positions in the super flex spot in this league." And he said he has got the 107 and the rest of his picks. He's leaning towards JJ McCarthy since he needs a QB2. But he said he's hoping that Brock Bowers, Drake May, or Rome Odunze fall to him. He said he hit on Sam Laporta last year, and he has been holding Kyle Pitts. "I don't have much behind them other than Chigga Conquo and Greg Dulcich on the roster. Would you be trying to do something with guys like Pitts or plus Jordan Addison or Chris Olave and Michael Mayer?" So they'd be curious to hear your thoughts on having depth at tight end and or quarterback with JJ at the 107. So he's also kicking around the idea of trading Achan plus for something like Drake London, Chris Olave, as well as getting another stud wide receiver to build around. So lots of questions going on to it. So to have a quick run over off the rosters, Lamar Jackson, Sam Howell, and he says other backups not worth listing, and then in brackets he has Andre Lance, is Bijan, Brees, Achan, Keaton Mitchell, and not much else at running back, but a strong group: Garrett Wilson, Devontae Smith, Jordan Addison, Zay Flowers, Marvin Mims, Jameson Williams, Dotson, and Treylon Burke. It's at wide receiver, and he does have sad in brackets beside Burke. So it hasn't worked out the way we hope, but who knows? Let's see what this year brings. There's Sam Laporta, Pitts, Dulcich, and Chig Okonkwo at tight end. He said, bonus question, should we still be holding Trey Lance? Which is interesting because you mentioned Trey Lance on that previous question. The answer there, Sean, is probably no, but I'll let you give your thoughts on that. He said, love the show recently and thanks a lot. So thanks to JD for sending in that question. So a number of questions in there, Sean. Let's kick off with the first one. Should you be holding Trey Lance on your roster?
I think so. I mean, if you have room for him, if you're playing,
this seems like a roster situation where it's, you know, probably 28 man rosters. Like some of the leagues that I play that aren't on the FFPC are 28 man rosters. This feels like, with the number of players that he's listed out there, that it's probably in that range. You have the ability in that situation to carry him, but even in the, you know, for cut down to 16 in the FFPC, would you be holding him in that situation?
I don't think that you can in the FFPC, but in other leagues, I think you definitely want to. because of the reasons that we just mentioned. I mean, players like a Jordan Love taking a little bit more time to develop, someone like a Geno Smith who comes back around, you know, almost 10 years down the line. And the thing with a Lance coming back down the line is that you have that elite rushing ability. And the big red flag for him coming out of college was that, similar to J.J. McCarthy, his team hit him as a passer as they were winning, you know, the national title. You know, you look at that championship game, hardly any passes. He's running a lot. Lance has the size, the physicality, the athleticism to give you the rushing upside that you need to dominate in these super flex positions. So everything about that is fantastic. Now, the concern, which definitely seems to be the problem, which manifested with the 49ers and is likely to limit him throughout the rest of his career, is simply that despite a lot of arm talent, the ability to actually play the QB position from a passing perspective isn't there. And yet, as a developmental player, as opposed to a top five pick in the NFL draft, you have the potential to get there in time. And as long as he's on teams that are loaded with talent as well, which may not always be the case, but that gives him another path to creating some of the upside that you need. And so Trey Lance, somebody who probably was never worth what the 49ers thought, and they seem to actually come to that conclusion very quickly, even though they did try and start him there for a while. But now that the prices are minimal, now it's a question of, like, do we hold him or simply cut him? I think that you want to hold him because there is a small chance that sometime in the future, he is a guy who is a big difference maker because he is such a fantastic athlete and gives you the rushing upside. I mean, that's something he very clearly demonstrated as a collegiate player. That part of his game is real and is there.
The second part then, I guess, to go into before we move into the depth of the other positions is a little bit tied, you know, in terms of the trade offers you could do. But the 107, talking about J.J. McCarthy and then, you know, needing a quarterback too, in this situation where you can, and most Superflex now, you can start, obviously, a non-quarterback in that position. We've talked a little bit about McCarthy and, you know, the potential that he could land, let's say, in a Minnesota where it's a perfect situation. And then obviously there's a lot of upside, but still likely to be in that game management situation or role, I guess. But in this situation, would you be looking for somebody like him at the 107 or continuing to pound and get more strengths at the other position, whether that's tight end or wide receiver, and use them as your flex rather than going with the need of I need a QB2 to fit in there rather than, like, because Lamar Jackson's going to be starting on this every week. I would probably be leaning towards the non-quarterback picks at the 107. If he stays where he is, are you recommending quarterback or to strengthen the game at the other positions?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of different ways to play this, and some of it is going to simply be personal preference. The more that I've looked into the quarterbacks, the more that I guess I don't really think that J.J. McCarthy is a game manager at the NFL level. I think he's a guy where, because he was a game manager for Michigan, we don't really know what he is. And it's interesting that so many NFL teams seem to feel comfortable with the idea that he can be a legitimate, like, top 10 pick. And once a guy is up into that range, I think that you can make the case for him being almost anything. And with McCarthy, you have the arm talent, you have the overall athleticism, you have the youth, and you have, you know, the moments that he's flashed at Michigan, even though overall his performance as a college player is unimpressive, right? But for McCarthy, I think that what we're looking at is a guy, because he's young and athletic, that as soon as you get the keys to the NFL franchise, you can be a star or you can be a pure bust. And with McCarthy, and just knowing what we know about QB hit rates, where, you know, probably best case you're talking about 50%, I mean, there's a huge bust risk here. And then the other thing is just, you know, you're not necessarily going to be a game manager, but you're also not going to be a hybrid QB to the extent that you make a difference with your legs. Now, McCarthy probably has the mobility to add some rushing value, but without the extreme rushing value, you have, number one, you're going to draft a guy who, from a fantasy perspective, is just a guy. even if from a reality perspective, he's a big time star. And then you have all of this bust risk. So you have to balance those two types of things. If he lands with the Minnesota Vikings, he could be someone who immediately takes this big, like Justin Herbert-esque jump to where, I mean, you're going to be throwing the ball to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson, once he comes back. And at that point, I think that the 107 is certainly fine for him. Now, does he make more sense, you know, at the 108, the 109, the 110? Could you move back a little bit and still get him? I think we don't know the answer to that yet because we don't know, like, how good the situation for Odunze is going to be. We don't know if Brian Thomas or Xavier Worthy are landing in a spot where people get really excited about them. And so you don't know what people are going to be willing to give you for the 107 as it contrasts with the 108 or the 109. You may not be in a position to move back. Having said all of that, when you're talking about the 107 and hoping that either Bowers May or Odunze falls to you, I mean, that's virtually locked in, right? You have the six big-time prospects, and then you have Odunze probably at seven. So Odunze and McCarthy battling for the 107 based on landing spot in the draft. So you can go a different direction if you want right there. And then I think it kind of depends on what picks you have in the second round. If it's the 207, which it sounds like from the message here, then maybe it's too far back to get one of the guys. But I'll have a piece out on Bo Nix either by the time the show has released. Very much column as people are listening to the show. I hope that Nix piece is out on the site. Something has gone wrong for me. If it's not, if he ends up in the right situation, and as I work through it today, it's hard for me to see how he could not be in a position to start as a rookie. You say that, and then your guy falls into round five, and you're like, well, I guess I didn't have any idea what was happening, right? So you never know. But if Nix is a starter, his background is fantastic. And he, I actually think, probably does profile as a game manager, but a game manager who, if you're talking about with the Broncos or maybe with the Giants, a team like that, the gap between what McCarthy gives you and what Nix gives you is probably fairly minimal. And because Nix is a guy who's not nearly as trendy and is so much older and is not going to be drafted in the top 10 picks, then you are going to have a meaningful difference in terms of where these guys go in your rookie draft. So if McCarthy is the 107 and Nix is the 207, then, you know, I'd be pretty tempted to try and get Nix. If people are as fired up about Nix as I am and the spot is perfect and a team kind of stays where they are as opposed to moving down and picking him in round two, then maybe he is the, you know, the 111 or the 201. You know, maybe as we just reference our previous trade, you know, maybe he's the guy who goes to the 201 and we can't get to him and we're disappointed. If those are the prices, then you probably might as well go for the guy with the upside. But I would be tracking where the rest of these QBs are going to go and, you know, trying to create as many pathways to success by maybe moving down a little bit or taking the cheaper quarterback as opposed to taking the risk on McCarthy unless you're really locked in. Anybody who's a McCarthy enthusiast, I think you should get your guy. If you're not, I think you want to look at some other possibilities.
And then on the tight ends, obviously Laporta, we know about Laporta, but I mentioned the Trey Lance part. I think with the changes in Atlanta and now, you know, you have the situation where you have Kirk Cousins coming in, the staff has changed. There's a lot of things potentially pointing upward for Kyle Pitts. I think if you're a Kyle Pitts manager at this point and you've held him through last season, I think there's, unless there's offers that are too good to refuse, I think you would be looking to hold him through this season, with a, you know, hope of that rebound happening. Then you have Dulcich and Okonkwo. Nothing happened for Dulcich last year. He was pretty much on injured reserve the entire season. Before last season, he was somebody I was very optimistic about, you know, continuing to develop and to, you know, show out at the NFL level. That obviously didn't happen. For me, there are two guys that if I have, I don't think you can get value back as to what I would want to get for either of those. Are they both players that you would see as potential depth options behind Laporta, as he asked about tight end depth, or are they players that you think that it's time to start to move beyond?
So in order to answer that a little bit, I can mention a trade that I did in another league, which was also at least in part to get down, right? And this was a big trade where I had selected Kyle Pitts early in the startup, and then he doesn't do a ton for me, and I'm looking to figure out how I can get back into the first round. I'm looking to figure out how I can move guys in such a way that I do get down and sort of balance out my risk and create as many pathways as possible. And so I didn't love this trade because I think that Kyle Pitts has massive, massive upside now that he's freed from the Arthur Smith offense. But I did move Pitts and McLaughlin in a 2025 round four, which again, they're going to be veterans in this draft. So a round four pick is not something that you're just going to give away, you know, for nothing. And I got back the 112, the 301, a 2025 round two, and Chase Brown. And so I would probably tell people you want to get even more than that because the 112 is not worth what Kyle Pitts should be worth to you. Chase Brown is somebody who, yeah, he's exciting, but that type of running back can probably be filled in other ways on your roster. Next year's round two could be a lot, could be a little. You have to wait on it. The 301 this year, I think post-draft that will get a little bit more exciting. We know that there were a lot of guys like a Jaden Reed, for example, in a decent number of drafts this past year. Certainly a Tyjae Spears was going there some. Roshan Johnson, who could have been worth more than he ended up being, is going in that type of range. So the 301 value, but you want to be careful about overstating that. But that, I think, is around the value that we're talking about for a Kyle Pitts. And where I have Pitts ranked is at the 312. So again, that's super flex. That's all the quarterbacks involved. That's one pick after a Dalton Kincaid. Now, I really like Chris Olave. And so if you're going after Olave and you can get him back in a move, I'm certainly in no way against that. But the overall values for me, as I'm looking at the trade, as it's discussed here, Olave would be the 301. He'd be the wide receiver 9. But you have Pitts at the 312. You have Jordan Addison, for me, is the wide receiver 20. Somebody I think you should be going after anywhere that you can, because I don't think that we're going to get too many more windows to buy him. Right now, you have the uncertainty about the QB that is really kind of dragging him down. He's behind, obviously, a Justin Jefferson. But this is going to be a situation, you know, in 6 months where we're talking about Jordan Addison being like the Calvin Ridley behind a Julio Jones, or being the T. Higgins behind a Jamar Chase. It's going to be that situation where the number two guy is extremely valuable. So he's a buy as opposed to somebody that you're going to use to make a trade work. And I think there's still a good chance that Michael Mayer does come through. I wouldn't be just, you know, getting rid of him without, you know, wanting to get something back, but I do have him down in round 11. So of the kind of four pieces discussed here, I think that his value is not anywhere close to the rest of those guys. I have him one pick behind a Ben Sinnott, which, I mean, Sinnott is the type of player who might be available at that 301 that we just discussed. And so when we're looking at that balance there, I certainly think you want to stick with your guys. You want to stick with a Kyle Pitts. You want to stick with a Jordan Addison. And if you're worried about the receiver depth, I'd be looking to address it in a slightly different way.
Lots of good information there from Sean, and thanks to JD for sending in that question. If you do have any questions you'd like to hear discussed or any topics on the show, you can leave us a comment if it's on the YouTube side, but you can also email it across at rotavizradio@gmail.com, or you can drop it my way on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. Try and add them into the shows where possible. I did mention this at the end of the last episode as well, but if you are interested in drafting with myself and Sean over at the FFPC and some upcoming best ball drafts, we will be organizing some RotoViz Overtime Listener Leagues in the coming weeks. Do let us know, and we'll be trying to get you in and involved. And those, again, same ways to contact me, rotavizradio@gmail.com, or also at Overtime Ireland on Twitter. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me over there at Overtime Ireland if you want. And of course, you can check out Sean's work up on rotoviz.com. And until we are back, have a good one. Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.